Welcome. This is the Life Habits Podcast series. My name is Carl Vredenberg.
And my name is Paige Herron.
This is the series that helps you to learn new habits to optimize your life and embrace an enlightened, healthy, and prosperous lifestyle. And today, I want to share with you the two major influencers in my life who inspired me the most in terms of habits that I've developed that have served me so well. I hope they'll be helpful to you too. These aren't your typical current social media influencers. They're instead people who provided me insights, lessons, and habits for everyday life. The first is the late Stephen R. Covey, and the second is Gerardina Leida Vredenberg, my late mother. I recorded a tribute episode after each of these influencers in my life passed away. Covey, of course, published a book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, in 1989. I read it that same year, and it changed my life. In fact, the book also inspired me to start this podcast 16 and a half years ago. My late mother was, and still is, the most influential person in my life, from sharing her wisdom, creativity, and iconoclastic perspective on life. I reprise edited versions of the two previous episodes that I recorded that detailed the key lessons that each of these people taught me. I hope you enjoy.
Let's go through a few quotes from Covey himself. The first is, "We are free to choose our actions, but we are not free to choose the consequences of these actions." Most people define greatness through wealth and popularity and position in the corner office. But what I call everyday greatness comes from character and contribution. Our ultimate freedom is the right and power to decide how anybody or anything outside ourselves will affect us. The key is not to prioritize what's on your schedule, but to schedule your priorities. Admission of ignorance is often the first step in our education. And lastly, and sort of summarizing the overall philosophy, our character is basically a composite of our habits. Because they are consistent, often unconscious patterns, they constantly daily express our character. So some great wisdom from a great man. Now, the 7 habits themselves are divided into basically 3 clusters. The first cluster is called independence or self-mastery and has all to do with really focusing on ourselves, on our own approaches, our own habits, obviously. The second major category is interdependence, and that is working with other people. And then the last and critically important category with regard to what we do here together as well is self-renewal. So let's start with the first cluster of independence or self-mastery. And the first habit, in fact, is be proactive. This is a case of determining that you should take the initiative yourself of realizing that you have a lot of power. You have a lot of degrees of freedom of things that you can decide to do or not. And if you take responsibility for having that power and take responsibility for choices that you make and that you should make, and also the consequences of them, you'll be in great shape to go through the remaining set of habits. The second habit is one that we've talked about a lot in this podcast series, and that is begin with the end in mind. And we have often talked about what's called the deathbed test, which is this notion of imagining at the end of your life that you would be looking back on your life and thinking, what would you like to have been considered to have contributed, what you're all about, and what your main qualities were, etc. And if you look back on your life and think about what attributes that you would think would be things that you'd want to be known for, that's a great way to start with getting a perspective on what things are the most important to you in life. And if you start from thinking about your core character values and essentially your life goals, what do you want to accomplish? What do you want to have been known to have contributed, etc.? You're going to be able to get clarity on what sorts of things are going to be most important. And later on, when we're looking at things like prioritizing your activities and the like, you'll be able to go down to this basic foundation of the end that you have in mind, meaning essentially what it is that you have as your core values and your core life goals and the core relationships that you want to develop to get there. And it'll always provide an appropriate moral compass, another word that he uses or phrase that he uses, so that when anything happens in life, you'll be able to steer the right course and make the right decision because you're not only being proactive, but you also have a clear vision of your life goals and the end that you want to achieve. This is similar too to the discussion we've had before when we've talked about career planning and planning things like your near-in and your intermediate sorts of goals as well, is to think of them with regard to actually having achieved them, not just thinking about things that you know, attributes that you may not want to be at, but thinking of actually being at that end state of having achieved that particular goal or set of goals and what that would entail and what that would feel like. Having that kind of clarity of what that end state that you're trying to achieve is, keeping that in mind and having that influence the various activities and tasks that you need to carry out in order to get to that end goal as well. So that's begin with the end in mind. Habit number 3 is put first things first. And he has a drill down book on this as well. And this is all about prioritizing and planning and then executing your activities. And he is a great advocate, as am I, due to Stephen Covey's writings and teachings, that we should not be planning on an hour by hour or day by day basis. A lot of people do that. A lot of people may, you know, the extent of their planning, if they do any planning at all, is at a daily level of figuring out what you need to accomplish that day and look at what's on your calendar, on your diary. And he advocates doing planning at a greater unit of time. And the one that is most recommended is the weekly plan. So that, this is how I still do it, basically on a Sunday evening, look at the week to come and think of, you know, what you want to accomplish in relation to the life goals, end life goals, as well as all the intermediate goals that you will have stated in going through the begin with the end in mind kind of exercises. So now you want to determine whether the activities that you have scheduled for the week are in fact aligned with and will help achieve, you know, the goals and the values that you have. And one, you know, very good way to do that as well that I think I've mentioned before is one of identifying specifically what those core values and core goals that you have are, and also the relationships in your life, and take each of those and map them to your calendar. In fact, for many years I had, and I still occasionally put them on, now it's become more routinized, but essentially scheduling and making sure that you schedule your time so that it's aligned with the priorities that you have in life. So if you stated that family was really important to you, and yet you look at your schedule for a week and it's nothing but work and it's all kinds of travel and it doesn't, quite frankly, include hardly any involvement with family, then you're not in line, right? And that kind of activity, when you use that kind of rigor to go through that, that can make you step back and say, I want to actually build a little more into the week in terms of spending some time with family. Or if it's the case that you needed to travel that week, well, why not take a longer weekend after that week so that you can really align your sort of goals and and the priorities that you have in life with the priorities that are actually embedded in your scheduled week as well. So this is one that a lot of people struggle with, the whole notion of never feeling like you have enough time. It's also the one that if you don't do effectively, you will get at those various stages later in life and think, where did all the time go? And I didn't actually align what I did in my life with the things that are most important to me. So this is one that is incredibly important. And again, if you want to follow up on any of this stuff in greater detail, I mean, I cover a number of these kind of topics in the podcast together that we have here, but there's also a lot of additional material on Covey's work. You can, you know, read his books, you can listen to the audiobooks. He was one of the first ones to actually have the work that he did available in audio form. Apparently the first very successful book in audio was in fact his Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. So you can listen to it in that way. There's also a whole institute that provides, you know, education and training and workshops and the like on these topics as well. So there's lots of additional material. I'll include some links to that as well. So those were the three habits: be proactive, begin with the end in mind, and put first things first, that are all in the independence or self-mastery cluster of habits. And the next cluster is interdependence, and this has all to do with working with others. And habit four is think win-win. I just absolutely love this one, and this is one that I have tried to live with and live aligned with for many years, which is all about not necessarily seeing or not seeing at all, you know, every interaction that you have, whether it's a business relationship, whether it's a personal one, that you need to drive, in Covey's words, for mutually beneficial solutions. Try to go for a win-win, meaning that you're both, if there's two people in a relationship, both in terms of the way you resolve situations, both feel good afterwards. And it isn't the case that one person drives for some negotiation to win out and the other person then loses. Ultimately, that doesn't yield a high quality of life for either of the players. And that this overall striving for a win-win is all about trying to respect the other people, trying to think and understand where they're coming from, so that you can satisfy the needs of both parties effectively in the resolution or in the progress that you end up making together. And you'd be amazed at how many situations you can look at and no longer see as a win-lose proposition, but instead go through Covey's kind of thinking here on getting to a win-win. Now, to get to that win-win, there are a couple of other habits that I think are really critically related to achieving a think-win-win. And the first of those is habit number five, which is seek first to understand, then to be understood. And I think I've also mentioned this a number of times on the podcast series, which is all about that we typically as human beings spend our time talking and not listening as much. And even when we're in a dialogue with someone else, we typically are rehearsing while they're talking. We're not really listening to them. We're really thinking about what we're going to say next, or how can we counter what it is that they're saying and all of that. As I've said here before, and as Covey advocates as well, you really need to develop a very effective habit of listening, and as I called it, authentic listening in the episode we did together on that topic, to be calm, to not say anything other than points of clarification, just to really develop this particular habit, and deeply understand what the person is getting at, really trying to understand it from their point of view well before you ever articulate your particular perspective on the topic. You'd be amazed at the difference that that kind of authentic listening will yield in your life when you get really good at it in a variety of ways. One way is that the person that you're speaking with will feel a whole lot better. Even if you're having an argument with them, if you are really understanding them and you really have also played back to them in summary form what you heard that they said, and that you're really showing that you are substantively really following what it is that they're saying and deeply understanding it, whether or not you agree with it, that in itself takes relationships really, really far down the road, in the sense of a level of trust, a level of understanding, a level of connection that just is not possible if we're doing nothing but talking ourselves. So first of all, you know, authentic listening and understanding what the other person's all about makes that other person feel really good. The other flip side of it is that it also provides you with an actual deep understanding of where they're coming from. And a lot of the time, especially when we're in arguments or we're speaking to somebody that is of a different opinion from our own, we often have little snippets, little summaries of what we think that view is, but we don't really know it in depth. We don't know the nuance of it. And if we truly try to understand, we can, in fact, glean a much deeper understanding of what that person's point of view is, and possibly change our own view as well. And if we can then, after getting a really clear understanding of their point of view, then express our views in a calm way, factoring in and even including content from what it is that they just said, yet a whole lot higher likelihood of an effective win-win, to go back to that one, outcome of the interaction. So think win-win and seek first to understand, then to be understood. The next and the third of the interdependence habits is synergize. And this is all about combining the strengths and abilities and insights of a group of people together. This is essentially the positive effects of teamwork. And the notion of that many of us know all about, but we often don't practice, which is that you can take a particular team, as an example, there's one particular soccer team that had on paper the absolute best players in the world. They were stars, almost every single one of them. When you looked at their stats, they were bloody amazing in terms of what their individual capabilities were. And you look at this other team that didn't really have all the greatest stars. In fact, there were a few, very few names that many people would know. But when you looked at the outcome of a significant series, it turned out that the latter team, the one that didn't have necessarily the stars on it, won, and the one that had all the stars on it did not win. And now, why is that? Because teamwork will often outperform simple individual contributions. There's a story that I think I've told in a previous episode as well, that my kids were playing on a hockey team some years ago when they were younger. And they were a very similar story again. They were on a team of kids that were really just learning the game. They did not have great, you know, skating skills or shooting skills. And they were playing a lot of teams that had kids on them that had, you know, much more well-developed skills. But this team that my kids were on were just an amazing team together, largely due to a particular coach that was just a phenomenal leader. He just had this amazing ability to give them a common vision and gave them the confidence that they could do this. And they practiced like crazy as a result. They would be out there playing their hearts out. And a lot of the other teams were, you know, they're confident of their skills and they would just go through their practices the way that they would normally do so. But this one that my kids were on just had this amazing ability to work well together as a team, again, largely due to this leadership of this coach. And they actually won the whole season. And why did they? And everybody looked around and said, what? Those kids? That's because they were working well together as a team. I always reflect on the celebration of individual accomplishments versus teamwork. And while A team is improved by having a collection of appropriate skills, obviously. The real significant contributions to the outcome of a team is really how well that team, you know, works together. So this whole notion of synergizing is all about having the appropriate leadership, having the appropriate relationships being developed between team members. And these can be, by the way, teams of any sort. You know, this can be a sports team like the ones I've been describing, can be a team at work, can be a team at home, it can be your family. Fundamentally, the interrelations between the individuals, the way that they interact, the way they become one as an overall team is critical to overall success. And we find ourselves in many situations where we need to work in teams. And you can have all the self-mastery in the world. You can be a phenomenal talent. You can have all the other things that Stephen Covey talked about in all the other habits thus far. But if you don't have this ability to synergize, to effectively work with other people in a team, to also know, for example, that you are under certain circumstances, it's appropriate to be a leader, and then there's other times that's appropriate to be a follower, that's how you end up being successful. Rather than always assuming that you've got a lead or always assuming that you're going to be, you know, a follower, really trying to get the nuance of the appropriate way that you should work in this particular group based on all the other people that are in the group, being able to do that really well, this skill that Covey calls synergize is key to overall success in many aspects of our lives. And so that's another one that he considers to be core. And then the last category of habits he calls self-renewal. And this is one that many of you, I think, have a good appreciation for, even though you may not be familiar with Stephen Covey's seven habits. But the last habit, there's only one habit in this category, and that is habit number seven, which is sharpen the saw. And I absolutely love this one. And many people that have read the books or have been aware of Covey's work can often just use this as a short form that, you know, at work, I'll make reference to that a particular employee should sharpen their saw. And people that have not read the work will kind of look askance and say, what are you talking about? But in reality, most people that have heard this concept before know exactly what it means, which is that, you know, if you are a person whose job it is to cut down trees with a saw, you do nothing but every single day go out there and use your saw to cut down trees, and you're trying to be really productive, you're all hours of the day, every day you're out there doing that, you're not going to be as effective or as productive as an equivalent person in the role that spends appropriate time using their saw to cut down trees, but also spends some appropriate time to go back and sharpen their saw so that their activity of cutting down trees will be that much more effective. You can actually, when you have a sharp saw, you can expend less energy, you can work faster, you can work cleaner, because the tools that you're using are tuned, are optimal to the task. And so he uses that concept to convey this notion of ensuring we have balance and we have an appropriate approach to renewing kind of our resources, our energy, our health, our skills for a long and effective life. And so that includes things very importantly, like our bodies, making sure that we exercise and keep our bodies in optimal shape, also our minds as a result as well, with doing things like meditation and yoga and the like, as well as our intellectual capabilities and our reasoning abilities and being able to extend ourselves with regard to our kind of mental renewal as well. And what this is all about is stepping back also and looking at your life and evaluating how things are progressing and determining what areas of your life you'd like to improve as well. And that is what all of you do, and I celebrate regularly the fact that you do that in listening to this podcast series and trying to look at various aspects of your life and sharpening the saw with regard to that aspect of your life. So that's really the seventh habit, which rounds out nicely the core concepts that Covey described in the seven habits of highly effective people. And like I say, there's lots of material to get additional insight, additional practice on a number of these things as well. Incidentally, he did also come out with an eighth habit. In fact, a whole book dedicated to it is one of the extensions of his seven habits work as well. That was all about finding your voice and inspiring others to find theirs. So for even deeper fulfillment in life, to expand and explore those directions as well. So, like I say, excellent contribution to the world from a very smart and insightful man that not only had these beliefs himself and this understanding from his education and from his observations of people over the course of his life, but also the ability to very effectively articulate and capture in appropriate words and appropriate concepts and appropriate examples, ways of having a large number of people gel and understand and internalize a lot of these ideas. There's a whole generation of people, and I know that many of you would be counted as part of that overall generation that have learned deeply the lessons from Stephen Covey that are the ones that we just went through here and have applied them in a variety of ways. And it's still also the case that for topics like this, and I find it regularly useful to come back to each of these habits again and say, so how are those working? You know, it's not the case you do this once and then you go off and do whatever it is that you're doing in life and you don't need to look back on it again. This whole notion of sharpening the saw is all about also those of you who have read the books in the past and have gone through workshops or whatever from the Covey approach. Go back to those lessons. Go back to these seven that I've just gone through here and see how you're doing on all of those. Do you want to, you know, sort of revisit some of these again? Even pull out your old material again and apply the wisdom of a very, very important man. And his work will live on in many of us, in the writings and in the variety of forms that his ideas have taken. And so a significant contribution to the world by a very significant figure.
So those were Stephen R. Covey's seven habits that I found incredibly useful, and I hope you do too. And I'd like to next take you to a session that I recorded talking about my mother's lessons for me as well.
I wanted to take this session to go through seven lessons that my mother taught me and my brother, and I think are worthy of sharing with all of you as well. So the first one of those life lessons was follow your passions. Do what you love and love what you do. Don't chase money. Find what really interests you and get really great at it. You know, she always encouraged us in ways that weren't all that obvious or literal to pursue things that we had some aptitude and some interest in. And I would advise the same for you. And really determine whether there are particular things that you are good at. If you have something you're trying, it might be a hobby, and you think, this is something that I really enjoy doing. It's also something that I'm actually getting better at. Well, pursue that, even though there may not be a direct path to making money with that. My mom's view was always that the making money part would come later. And this was truly the case for the path that my brother and I ended up going. And I would suggest the same for you. And it also doesn't mean that you need to be doing things in a formal kind of institutional way either. In my mother's case, she didn't have a lot of formal education, but yet she had such an incredible thirst for knowledge that she pursued very deeply all kinds of readings. And we've talked about on this podcast series that we in sort of this generation have even greater opportunity to do that with the internet and the like. But what she used to do is read quite widely in philosophy, in economics, in science, and would, as we would go through our university time, both undergraduate and graduate level work, and also afterwards when publishing academic papers, she would always ask to read those papers and have a discussion about them. And despite not having a really deep formal education, because of her wide reading and her interest in these topics, would often be the most insightful reviewer of that material as well. And so while we may have gotten any number of comments from academics and industry specialists on the topics that we were writing about, that we got reviews back from the journals and the like, they were often not quite as challenging to address as were our mothers. So here's a case of her pursuing her interests, generating an interest in her children in topics that were well beyond anything that she had formal education in. So having this incredible thirst for knowledge, having an incredible thirst for really getting good at whatever it is that you choose to be of interest to you is really what this first life lesson is all about. Number two is to look to the future, to anticipate and build your life plan. She and the rest of the family were born in the Netherlands, and she had a view, as many immigrants did, of new places in the world to consider going to and building a new life. And any of you who have done that or your families have done that, I salute you, as that's a really tough decision to make, and then also a tough one to realize and realize the benefits of as well. But it takes some level of trying to anticipate what that may be like and whether that is the right thing to do for a family. You know, it was also other things of looking to the future and anticipating what might be needed with regard to family as well. I, during my high school years, grew rapidly to a height of 6'3". And with that incredible growth spurt, I ended up being rather sensitive to my height. I wouldn't walk, you know, up straight because all my friends were a lot shorter than I was. I just didn't have a good sense of my body, and with my voice changing as well, was rather sensitive about that as well. And she saw that and encouraged me to sign up for theater arts classes, to further pursue my music in a performing sense. And I ended up doing, during my high school years, a significant amount of performance-based work on the stage a lot. And I attribute a lot of my successes in life that required the ability to speak, the ability to be confident in front of a crowd or a large number of people, as well as having a good sense of your own body and being comfortable in your own body. All those things were things that I learned very early on, largely because my mother had the insight and looking into the future as to what I would need and encouraged me to pursue those interests. And like I said, a lot of the things that I do today, I would not be comfortable or good at had it not been for that early training. Number three is to be a leader and a doer, not just a follower. To this day, I still have difficulty sitting in the audience of a performance or a sporting event because my mother was so focused on not just being passive. Getting out there and doing was her thing. Wanted to make sure that when it came to any number of topics, that it was a matter of stepping back and thinking, what could I do to be better at whatever it is that the topic was? And then also getting into a leadership position. Now, we've talked on this podcast series in the past about finding the appropriate time to be a leader and when to be a follower. And that clearly still is appropriate. But a lot of people in many situations, in my view and in my mother's view, just don't get into the action. They wait for other people to take the lead. They see a situation happening in a street or in the world and consider themselves either passive or powerless and always wait for somebody else to make the move and to be the leader. And my mother would always encourage us to not do that, to instead be that person that would step out of the crowd and make a difference and be a doer. Number four was to stay humble. Don't let successes go to your head. Don't be arrogant. Even if somebody were to be the best in their field, it's appropriate for they themselves and others for that person to be appropriately humble. Think of the people that you may have observed that are really good at what they're doing and the feelings that you have for them and the admiration you have for them and how that's different if they're just so incredibly full of themselves and their accomplishments and their abilities versus somebody that has that exact same incredible skill set and performance and success, but is appropriately humble about it. It's appropriate for the person themselves in order to still realize that there's a lot more to achieve. And for others listening, it's also makes that person even more attractive and admirable. And you know, the view too of reinforcing certain types of behavior was in her tool set of parenting in much the way that we talked on a previous podcast about the growth mindset. I'd like to reinforce that here again as well. She, my mother that is, would rarely, if ever, say, "You're so smart, you're so talented." It was always, "You really worked hard at that and you saw the benefits of your labors and I'm so proud of what you've accomplished." She was even rather miserly with that line. But the whole notion that you really needed to keep working hard and that it wasn't that you had all these great abilities inside you that simply needed to come out, as we talked about on that podcast episode. It was all about working hard and achieving and striving for a level of mastery of particular topics. That was really the main focus of the reinforcement and the leadership. So stay humble. Number five was be fair. Mother was even fair to a fault. Within the family, everything needed to be absolutely fair. And also a real sense of not being beholden to others. Certainly also taking that lesson forward. I encourage you all to do that as well. Again, a case of when you're doing things with others, you value those others. One of the ways of valuing them and expressing your respect for them is to be fair and to be equal in all things that you do. Number six was to be frugal. And again, we've had a dedicated episode on that in this series as well. Watch what money's coming in and what's going out, particularly the going out part. But very importantly, don't be cheap or even appear to be cheap. Value the important things in life and be able to carry those out with the money that you have. My mother and our family never had, especially early on, a lot of money. But yet, my mother would use her skills as a seamstress, for example. She was an amazing seamstress, to make clothes for the family, even business suits for my father. And as kids, my brother and I could be watching something on television and say, really love that outfit. I'd love to have that. And without a pattern, my mother would actually just be able to visualize that and create that particular garment, whatever it was, from scratch. Essentially just going to buy the fabric for it and be able to cut it and sew it. And so we had incredibly innovative clothes that were quite high fashion when we were in high school, for example, and the only thing was that we didn't have the label. It was essentially mom's. But it was a case where was something that would normally have taken a lot of money to pay for all the, you know, labeled clothes. And yet here she used her own skill effectively for the family to minimize the money we needed to spend on things like that. And the net result was, and you know, my brother and I didn't even perceive it as something where she was actually saving money. It was, to us, you know, amazing that we got to have custom made clothes all the way through, which we sort of took for granted at times too, thinking that we could just specify what it is that we wanted to have made, and we had our custom seamstress make that for us. I also did a lot of work on refurbishing antique furniture from various sources. And so the whole approach was one of using your skill to make everything work, and that there wasn't only a single path, and the only single path was you needed to make a lot of money to pay for this stuff. And I've seen many other instances of people being really innovative at this topic, especially during difficult times. This is one, again, to be thoughtful about. And don't think that there's only one path, and that that path is simply always to just earn more money. The seventh life lesson that my mother taught me, and I would like to encourage others to as well, is to be authentic, to express yourself honestly and openly, and to have integrity in all things, and to be comfortable with who you are and what views you hold as well. You have to sometimes be sensitive to the ways in which you say certain things on certain topics if you have controversial views on particular topics, and that my mother did as well on a number of topics. But it's important not to shy away from being authentic, being true to yourself, being true to what you truly believe, and having that level of integrity. Now, those were a highlight of just seven of the life lessons out of a very full and long life that my mother had, and that I think I have been all my life, and I continue to try to live by. And there obviously were more than seven, but I wanted to share with you kind of the top seven that I thought were instructive. And it's not like we haven't touched on some of these before, but it's important, I think, to reflect on what has made you who you are, and a lot of the makeup of when you think of all of us and how we came to be, and where did our views come from, where did our motivations come from. It's obviously multifaceted, but as I've mentioned before as well, the influence that our parents had are significant. And I think it's important to step back and think about that and reflect on how you may well want to take the insights that you have gleaned from the important people in your life. And it's not just parents, of course. It's also others. May have been an uncle, an aunt, a particular teacher, a particular friend. But I think it is important to step back at times and reflect on what the totality of the key lessons that they provided you. And as we talked about in episode number 46 on familial insights, it's also important to share that with the people who are important to us. And I might also add that these seven life lessons, I also took the opportunity to reflect back to my mother, actually 2 years ago, around the time that I recorded that episode 46 on a Mother's Day. I asked her to listen while I described what I thought were the critical things that she gave me that really made a difference in my life. And, you know, when I was at the hospital in the final moments, I was very thankful that I had taken the time, not necessarily right then there in the hospital. We did reinforce the same sorts of things, but you can never go through the same depth of a topic in an environment like that. But I was really, really thankful that a couple of years ago that I had taken the opportunity to go through and really do it as a focused effort. And she, at the time, as I'd mentioned in episode 46, really appreciated my summary as well. So in addition to sharing these life lessons from my mother with you today, I'd like to, again, as I said in episode 46, encourage you all to do that with the people that are important to you before they're gone. It's with great sadness, I think, when we get into situations like that, when we realize it's too late and you don't have the opportunity to express what you truly believe and what you truly appreciate it. And so I encourage you to do that as well.
I'd like to ask you to contribute what you can financially, either as a one-time payment with our tip jar, or better yet, select a recurring monthly contribution. Just click on the tip jar link or the support the podcast link in the show notes. You can also go to our website, lifehabitspodcast.com, and click on the support the podcast tab. Doing that will ensure that Paige and I will be able to continue to bring this podcast to you each week. I've never had advertising or asked for contributions during my previous 16 years because it wasn't my job. This is Paige's job. And so I would greatly appreciate it if you could consider contributing financially to the podcast. Thanks so much. Visit our website, lifehabitspodcast.com, to sign up for our newsletter, get in touch with us, and find our social media pages. If you love our podcast, please give us a rating in the app you're listening to us on, follow us, and share us with your friends. And with that, Paige and I would like to thank you for listening to our podcast. We hope you found it helpful. We appreciate you. We'll talk to you next time, and bye for now.